I thought it would be very appropriate to give some of that sermon again here today. For those of you who didn't hear it, those of you who did hear it, hopefully you won't mind hearing it again. I've changed it a little, but it's basically the same message. But Children Are a Blessing is the title of this sermon, and it really builds on what Mike said. I really appreciate Mike giving that sermonette, because Chris was going to give it, Chris Hansen, but he's sick, couldn't be here today, so Mike at the last minute got up and gave a sermonette. Chris and Nikki's son was one of those who was going to be blessed today, but unfortunately they can't be here because he's sick. You know, being in Ghana, as I mentioned before, Ghana is very different to the United States, and you see this in particular in a number of different areas. This year at the feast, one of the challenges I had was over funerals, because funerals are a very big thing in Ghana. They're the biggest thing of all. One of our most loyal and faithful members, a guy called Henry Akins, who's been in the church for almost as long as we've been going to Ghana. He came in 1980, I think, so about 2 years after we arrived there. You know, Henry Akins was telling me that when his father died a couple of years ago, the family expected him to give over 1 year of his income to the cost of the funeral. Now, he was just one son. When I asked him how many children there were, I think there were 15, or was it 17? It just was a lot of children. Three wives. The guy had three wives. And, you know, it was an interesting conversation, because I was asking Henry about how that worked out. And he said the most telling thing he said was that not one of the children, not one of the 15 children, has had multiple wives. So the experience of being in a polygamous family turned all the children against polygamy, and none of them want to have more than one wife. So they're all in monogamous relationships. So I guess something good did come out of that polygamous relationship that the father had. But when the father died, every single one of the children had to contribute to the funeral. And basically, each person had to contribute a little bit more than 1 year's income. Now, we're talking here about a poor country. And, you know, in the capital city of Accra, where this father died, the highest income that anybody would have, anybody, would be $700 a month, or the equivalent of $700 a month. That is the highest. Most people would be earning in the $200, $300 a month range. That's it. Now, when you get out in the villages, it's about $30 a month at maximum. But in the cities, you know, it can get much higher. But to put all of that, your whole salary for a year, into a funeral, when you understand what we understand, is just so pointless. And this is actually what I spoke on the last great day, because it is a constant challenge for our members in Ghana. In fact, it is the equivalent of, say, in the United States, one of the biggest problems would be for people coming into the church, and we had a couple from Australia who said the same thing about Australia, is, you know, sports is a big thing on Sabbaths, and a lot of kids feel left out. So, you know, that's a big challenge here. And, of course, job also, work can be a big challenge here. The biggest challenge for our members in Ghana, without a doubt, is funerals, because funerals are always on Saturdays. And because people have big extended families, they can be at a funeral every week. And, of course, it stops people sometimes from going to church. It's a constant conflict with family. And I spoke on this on the last great day to help people to understand how, really, the funeral customs are ridiculous, that people spend so much money on a funeral and put so much effort into it, and funerals last so long. At least 3 days, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, just non-stop drinking, partying, the celebration of the person's life, kind of seeing the person off, so to speak. But, of course, the traditional belief is that your ancestors are there with you. They're all around you. So, therefore, you have to impress the ancestors by having the biggest funeral of all. So there's this constant pressure, similar to how in America, you know, a lot of people will want the biggest wedding, because everybody's trying to not just keep up with the Joneses, but surpass the Joneses. So weddings are getting more and more expensive. In Ghana, funerals are getting more and more expensive. And you can see in Ghana the most elaborate caskets that are made They're standing up at the side of the road so that you can stand in them just to check the size, to check the fit, you know, if you want to. And the one I thought was the best is the Coca-Cola bottle, you know, and you can just stand in there. It's the old-fashioned Coca-Cola bottle, so it goes in a bit just there, so it's a bit tight for some of us. But, you know, you can get in there and be buried in a Coca-Cola bottle if you want to. And, you know, they have amazing coffins there, and they can be quite humorous to see them. So this is a big difference between Ghana and the United States. Of course, there's other differences, too. I mean, I've told you before, one of the biggest differences is just the attitude towards size, that the bigger you are, the better it is in Ghana, whereas here, of course, it's the other way around. But there's also another major cultural difference that I constantly observe, and that is in the attitude towards children. And that's what I want to talk about for a few minutes here. When a couple marry, if the wife is not pregnant within a few weeks, both families will put pressure on the couple to have a child. And I mean serious pressure, big pressure. It's very common, actually, for a husband to be taken aside, or even not taken aside. He'll be told this in public, that his in-laws will say to him, "What's the matter? Are you not a real man? You cannot produce children?" You know, the pressure is on. You must have children, and you must have a child once a year, basically, is where the emphasis is. If the husband or wife gets sick, it will be considered a punishment from God because they've not had children. After the arrival of the first, it's expected that many others will follow, preferably at the rate of one per year. It's not surprising that the birth rate in Africa is 8.2 children per couple, compared to a U.S. birth rate of 1 point something. A nation needs a birth rate of 2.1 just to stay even. For decades now, people from the rest of the world have been arriving in their millions to fill the gap left by a low birth rate in the U.S. You know, we talk a lot about illegal immigration, and a lot of people are turning against illegals, and sometimes even turning against legal immigrants. But the fact is, we need them because our birth rate is so low. So the real problem lies with ourselves. You know, if people had 8.2 children like they do in Africa, then we wouldn't need all this immigration. Other Western countries have the same problem. In fact, there's only one place in the world where the number of people of Caucasian descent is increasing. Only one place in the whole world, and that's Utah, because the Mormons do not believe in birth control. I think, you know, Mitt Romney has, 5 sons and 4 daughters or something, and that's fairly typical of Mormon families. They don't practice birth control, so therefore Utah is the only place in the world where the number of white people is actually increasing. The U.S. population this year hit the 300 million figure. A few weeks later, it was announced that minorities number 100 million, a full third of the nation. At one time, it was 10%. In the middle of this century, the majority will become the minority based on current demographic trends. Bill Clinton boasted on this about this recently and told people, he said, "You better get used to it because, we will be the minority at some point in this century." And, he was somewhat gloating about that and saying, "You better get used to it." The fastest growing communities in the United States are Hispanics and Muslims. The problem is cultural. Our parents had lots of children. At the time of the Civil War, most couples would have had 8 or 9 children. That remained the same at the beginning of the last century. When the first birth control clinic opened in the United States in 1916, former President Theodore Roosevelt predicted it would be the end of our civilization. Almost a century later, it's clear his prediction is turning out to be very accurate. Diane and I were in Ontario in July for a few days, and everywhere we went, I noticed lots of old people. I commented on it to Diane. In fact, one afternoon, we went to the theater to see a live stage play, and I said to my wife that I thought I was the youngest person there. That gives you an idea as to how old this community was. The theater was full. Every seat was occupied. But I thought I was the youngest person there until I saw this really young guy who must have been about 40, and that gave me some relief that I wasn't the youngest person in the theater. But it was no surprise when that evening on Canadian television, on the news, it was announced that the average age of Canadians is now well above 40. It's gone up considerably. Imagine what it would be if there was no immigration to bring it down. A family we visited in southwestern Ontario told us that the local school had closed down due to falling enrollment. It wasn't difficult to understand why. This particular couple who had a farm, their 14-year-old son was their only child. Schools are also closing here. People are just not having children like they used to. When we came back, the very day we came back, the Lansing State Journal's front page article was on how the average age of farmers in Michigan is 55. And it was asking the question, what are we going to do for food 20 years from now? So we've got a serious problem here with a low birth rate and an aging population. Defenders of massive immigration say that we need lots of young people from the third world to pay the taxes that fund Social Security. Do we honestly believe that 20 years from now, Muslims, Africans, and Mexicans will pay Social Security for elderly whites? I don't think so. A few weeks ago, we were in Jamestown, as you know, for the 400th anniversary of the first English colony in North America, which eventually led to the creation of the United States. At the time in 1607, I doubt the Native Americans thought that the 104 settlers who had arrived from England on those first ships would eventually take over the continent, but they did. Just 104 people. Whenever I fly back from Ghana, there's three times that many people on each plane, and there's 68 transatlantic flights per day. Could they take over? I think it's naive to assume that everybody who comes here is assimilated. Salman Rushdie, an ex-Muslim, said recently that when a Muslim from the Mideast comes to Michigan, he's not looking to take advantage of America's freedoms. Rather, he sees himself as part of the advance guard spreading Islam to the United States. And the high birth rate is seen the same way, as part of the Islamization of the West. So it is deliberate. Have lots of children, because that will lead to the Islamization of America, America becoming a Muslim country. And it's all made possible by our low birth rate. Edward Gibbon in the 18th century wrote his famous Decline and Fall of the Roman Empire. And one thing he brought out in there was the low birth rate of the Romans that contributed to the fall of the empire. In order to fill the gap, as they had less children, they brought in more and more barbarians, as they called them, foreigners, aliens, and eventually they just simply took over. And I'm sure when a similar book is written about the decline and fall of the Western world, you know, this will be very much the case. Now, what's amazing is that most Americans are Christians, or call themselves Christians, and yet seem to ignore the biblical teachings on the subject of children. In the scriptures, children are always a blessing. Always. As I said, that's the title of my sermon. Children are a blessing. So let's have a look at some of those scriptures of how children are a blessing. Genesis chapter 1 is a good place to begin. Because right at the beginning, you see just how God intended us to have lots of children. Verse 26 and verse 27 of chapter 1, God said, "Let us make man in our image." So man is different right there from everybody else. "Let us make man in our image according to our likeness. Let them have dominion over the fish of the sea, over the birds of the air, and over the cattle, over all the earth, and over every creeping thing that creeps on the earth." So God created man in his own image. In the image of God he created him, male and female he created them. Then God blessed them, and God said to them, "Be fruitful and multiply. Fill the earth and subdue it. Have dominion over the fish of the sea, over the birds of the air, and over every living thing that moves on the earth." So man was a special creation to be over all the other beings that God created, the animals. Now, man was created in the image of God. So completely different from all the other creatures that God created. And man was told to replenish the earth, to be fruitful and multiply. Genesis chapter 22. Genesis chapter 22. Again, we see prophecies of lots of children being a tremendous blessing. Abraham, who is our ancestor, the ancestor of the Israelites, was told this on a number of occasions. Here in verse 15, the angel of the Lord called to Abraham a second time out of heaven and said, "By myself I have sworn, says the Lord, because you've done this thing and have not withheld your son, your only son, blessing I will bless you, and multiplying I will multiply your descendants as the stars of the heaven and as the sand which is on the seashore. And your descendants shall possess the gate of their enemies." You know, and this was fulfilled in the 1700s, the 1800s, the physical descendants of Abraham, notably the descendants of Joseph, spread out around the world. They had lots of children. They had the numbers. It was a blessing. And God said, "I will bless you. I will multiply your descendants as the stars of the heaven." You can't count the stars. You couldn't count the descendants of Abraham. Today you can count them much more easily because there's not so many of them. But, you know, 100 years ago, you couldn't count them. Look at chapter 32 and verse 12. Chapter 32 and verse 12. Here God says, "I will make your descendants as the sand of the sea, which cannot be numbered for multitude." Again, you can't count the grains of sand or on the seashore, and in the same way you wouldn't be able to count the numbers of the descendants of Abraham. By the way, these scriptures show clearly that Abraham's descendants are not just the Jews, because it's easy to count the number of Jews. That, you know, there aren't that many, and you know, it's known just how many Jews there are in the world. But of course, Abraham's descendants are far more than just the Jews. All the Israelites are descended from Abraham. In Genesis chapter 48, which we won't turn to, one of Abraham's descendants, Joseph, was told that he would have his children, Ephraim and Manasseh, would become preeminent in the world, one becoming a great multitude of nations, one the greatest single nation in the world. And of course, that has been the world that we have come out of, where the United States has been in dominance for 60 years, and before that the British Empire was in dominance for 200 years. And again, a contributory factor was the number of children that people had. In Victorian times, people had lots of children. You know, my grandmother had 8 children. Now, 4 of them died, but she had 8 children, and that's only, 100 years ago. Psalm 127, I want to read the same passage here that Mike read earlier, verse 3, "Behold, children are a heritage from the Lord." Again, I'm reading these to emphasize that everywhere you look in the Bible, the children are a blessing. The more you have, the greater the blessing, the more you are blessed. And that is the thinking still in most of the world. It hasn't changed. Our thinking is different, but that doesn't mean we're right. You know, their thinking is more in tune with God's thinking on this. "Behold, children are a heritage from the Lord. The fruit of the womb is a reward." So, you know, again, a blessing here. "Like arrows in the hand of a warrior, so are the children of one's youth." Now, it's interesting that word arrows is used. You look that up in Jameson, Fawcett, and Brown, in their commentary. The connotation here in Hebrew is that the word actually means literally defenders. It's talking about defenders, those who defend you with arrows. So, you know, one of the reasons to have lots of children is for defense, because, you know, we're in a world where everybody wants to kill us, and that's still true. You know, most of the world would still like to see the United States destroyed. And of course, there's a lot of hatred directed towards us. And one of the reasons to have lots of children is for defense. "Like arrows in the hand of a warrior, so are the children of one's youth." You know, they'll protect you, they'll defend you. "Happy is the man who has his quiver full of them. They shall not be ashamed, but shall speak with their enemies in the gate." Even that reference there, speaking with their enemies in the gate, is a reference to the fact that sometimes in a dispute, the children, when they are adults, will have to protect their elderly parents in the gate, which is where, you know, the elders would sit, including the lawyers, like the court, but it would be in the gate at the entrance of the town. And this is where disputes would be resolved with the local leadership. And, you know, your children, when they're adults, will be there to protect you in a land dispute or a property dispute or something. They would take care of you. So, you see, it's a tremendous blessing that is being prophesied here as a result of having children. Now let's look at some prophecies on this subject. Deuteronomy chapter 28, which we've looked at before, but it's a very good passage, this. If you remember a couple of weeks ago, 3 weeks ago when I was here, I asked if anybody could look up with a passage that George Washington turned to at his inaugural address in 1789. And I'd read in one book that this was the chapter that he turned to. And that would have been perfect for my article. But unfortunately, some of you sabotaged my article, because when you looked it up in your books, it said that he turned to Genesis chapter 49. Which I think is also interesting, because Genesis 49 is the chapter that lists the conditions in which the 12 tribes of Israel will be at the end time. So it still shows something interesting. Now, there's one or two books, by the way, that say he turned to nothing. So who knows exactly what happened. You know, this to me is a perfect example of the problem of news sources even today. Because if anything happens, you know, you look at all the different newspapers that are available. Sometimes you look at what one newspaper says and what another newspaper says, you wonder if they're reporting the same event. Because each reporter sees something different, you see, and emphasizes different things. And this is why it's always good to vary your news sources, not to rely on one news source. Because if you do, you're just seeing everything through the prism of their prejudices and their preconceived ideas. And I think that was true even in George Washington's day. Those people who recorded what happened, first swearing in of the president, that first inaugural, the people who recorded it obviously disagreed. They recorded something different. Now, I would think there's a logical explanation. You know, perhaps at one point he did turn to Deuteronomy 28, at another point to Genesis 49, at another point he had the Bible closed. Who knows which was when? But getting to the bottom of it in time to finish my article was impossible. So I thank you all for looking into it, but, you know, there was no conclusion, no definite conclusion, because there were three different things reported on what happened that particular day. And as far as I know, nobody from that day is alive today, so we won't be able to ask anybody for their own experience. Anyway, look at Deuteronomy 28. Deuteronomy 28. It shall come to pass, if you diligently obey the voice of the Lord your God, to observe carefully all his commandments which I command you today, that the Lord your God will set you high above all nations of the earth, and all these blessings shall come upon you and overtake you, because you obey the voice of the Lord your God. Blessed shall you be in the city, blessed shall you be in the country, blessed shall be the fruit of your body. In other words, a blessing of obedience is lots of children. Lots of children, which of course also gives you preeminence over the other nations. The nations of the earth in Genesis, the book of Genesis, are tribes. That's basically what developed into countries. Tribes. You know, in England it's the Anglo-Saxons. Of course today you've got Indians, Pakistanis, Bengalis and everybody else there. But right up until roughly World War II, basically England was the Anglo-Saxons. And the Scots and the Welsh and the Irish were Celts, descended from a tribe known as the Celts. The French, you know, are another tribe. In fact, the French are more than one tribe. You know, Reuben is one tribe. We know that from, you know, Bible prophecy. But you've also got Celts there in Brittany. Of course, the Germans are different tribes as well. Each country was different tribes. And that's basically the way it was when God divided the races, and all the different nations are mentioned in the book of Genesis. They're different tribes. And what gives one country preeminence over another is the number of its people. So here's a blessing. Blessed shall be the fruit of your body. The more children you have, the greater the preeminence you will have over the other nations. And 100 years ago, the Anglo-Saxons, the tribe of Joseph, whatever, the British and American people, had preeminence because their numbers were so much greater. Then you go to verse 15 and you see that having less children is a curse. It shall come to pass if you do not obey the voice of the Lord your God to observe carefully all his commandments and his statutes which I command you today, that all these curses will come upon you and overtake you. Cursed shall you be in the city, cursed shall you be in the country, cursed shall be your basket and your kneading bowl, cursed shall be the fruit of your body. So, you know, this again is the end result of disobedience. But it doesn't mean that people can't have children. I mean, in our society, what's happened is that people don't want children. And, you know, that includes my wife and I, too. We stopped at three. You know, we were finding that going backwards and forwards between Ghana and England and all the other countries we had to go to, it was just impossible with three children. And, you know, to have a fourth, you know, we just thought it was just too much. And so, you know, for different reasons, people stop. Some people stop at two, some stop at one, some don't want any. But when you think about it, you know, and I've come to this conclusion at 56, not at 26, you know, when we, yesterday was our 32nd anniversary, so how old was I when I got married? 24, I guess. But, you know, 30 years ago, you know, the thinking was different. But now I can see, wait a minute, our thinking has not been right. It has not been in accordance with God's word in this particular area. And, you know, because everywhere you look in the Bible, the more children you have, the greater the blessing as far as God is concerned. But this also ties in with our morality as a nation. Look at Hosea, the book of Hosea. Hosea is a book that is specifically about Ephraim, which is the multitude of nations, the British, Australians, and so on, Canadians. But Ephraim symbolizes Israel, the 10 tribes. So this is applicable to all the nations of Israel. You know, the Israelites, it has been pointed out, the nations descended from Israel, not one of them will survive this century. Because every single one of the nations descended from the 12 tribes of Israel, every single one, whether it's Britain, Canada, Australia, New Zealand, the United States, Sweden, Denmark, Norway, Finland, Belgium, the Netherlands, France, every single one of the nations descended from Israel, by the end of this century, they will be minorities. The majority in their countries, in many of those countries, will be Muslims, based on present demographic trends. And, you know, that is the end result of what's taking place. So Israel will cease to exist. Hosea chapter 4, verse 10. Here's a prophecy about Ephraim at the end time. They shall commit harlotry, but not increase. And of course, this is so true of all our nations in the Western world today. There's a great deal of sexual activity going on, but the irony is we have a very low birth rate. They shall commit harlotry, but not increase. You know, people get married later. People are able to avoid having children because of, you know, all the preventive measures that they can take. And the result is that a lot of people even, you know, don't even think about a family until they're around 40. In fact, my sister-in-law, who had two children from a previous marriage, her son, who's 40, just had their first child. They're in Vancouver, the Vancouver area. And they just had their first child at age 40. And that's not uncommon now. Now, you know, in Ghana or anywhere in Africa, people would have 8 or 10 by that time, you see. So, again, it illustrates the difference. Look at verses 17 and 18. Ephraim is joined to idols. Let him alone. You know, I think that's very true. You know, people are worshipping all kinds of different things, but they're not worshipping God. Their drink is rebellion. They commit harlotry continually. You know, it's interesting. And binge drinking is a very big thing in England, which is the primary nation of Ephraim. And, you know, I think a lot of it is just people are just so unhappy. You know, most people aren't even aware of God. No concept of God. No religious knowledge whatsoever. Now, I know there are people in the United States like that, but... Most Americans still have at least some knowledge of God, even if it might be rather limited. But I find when I get together with my family, it's a totally different world because, you know, there's just no knowledge, no understanding of anything to do with God. You know, the four brothers that I got together with last Saturday night, and got together with them and their wives, you know, not one of them has a Bible and has no biblical knowledge whatsoever. And, you know, people's lives, therefore, are empty. And, you know, I think it is very true what it says here, that drink is rebellion, conveys two things. One is, you know, a lot of the young people are, in fact, so many young people are drinking so heavily that now you're getting girls in their mid-20s dying of cirrhosis of the liver, which was unheard of 10 years ago. And yet now it is very common. Apparently, I didn't know this, but women cannot handle the alcohol as well as men can. And so young girls in particular in their 20s are dying from this, and it's a major social problem. It's also a problem here, of course. I don't know whether it's worse here than it is in England or better. I don't know. But certainly it was being much talked about last weekend in England, and I read a couple of articles in the newspaper about it. One thing is rebellion. Kids are rebelling against their parents. But another thing is, and this is what Jameson, Fawcett, and Brown claims is conveyed here, people are basically just wasted. You know, that's not the word they use in Jameson, Fawcett, and Brown's commentary, because that was written a couple of hundred years ago. But it basically brings out, these are people who just, you know, they are so inebriated, so drunk, they cannot function. And that's what is being conveyed here in this particular passage. And that is the way that it is. In fact, when I get together with my brothers, we get together at the pub, but we don't go into the downtown area anymore because all of the pubs there are just full of people getting wasted on a Saturday night, and then, you know, they start fights and they throw up and everything else. I mean, it's just awful. So we go somewhere that's more respectable. Their drink is rebellion. They commit harlotry continually. You see the sexual sin, which often follows on from drinking too much. Her rulers dearly love dishonor. What is conveyed there is just that the leaders of the country have no moral scruples themselves, and I think that's true. You know, that is true of most politicians on both sides of the Atlantic today. The people are leading empty lives, and that's what's being conveyed here. Whereas previous generations were busy working, marrying, and raising children, many today in the peak reproductive years are busy partying and fornicating. Now, how did this change take place? Well, it goes back to that first birth control clinic in 1916, but primarily to the invention of the birth control pill in 1960, which changed everything. It took away the incentive for men to work and marry. And it's different in other cultures because it's not available in most countries in the world. They don't allow it, and so it's different in many countries. Look at Hosea chapter 9, another passage on this. And again, this is the state of Israel today. All the Israelite nations, including Israel, the Jews in the Middle East, Daniel Pipes, who is one of the greatest experts in America on Islam, sent out a newsletter yesterday or the day before, which I read, where he brings this up. He says, you know, Israel is threatened primarily because of its low birth rate. And, you know, it's just not going to survive if the Jews don't start having children. But, you know, people just don't have children. The Arabs have a lot of children. I'll read you something in a moment along those lines. But as for Ephraim, in verse 11 of chapter 9, as for Ephraim, their glory shall fly away like a bird. No birth, no pregnancy, and no conception. So here was Ephraim that dominated the world 100 years ago. Their glory shall fly away like a bird, just like a bird, you know, flies and immediately it's gone. Very quickly it's gone. And, you know, that's what's conveyed here. The glory of Ephraim would quickly go. No birth, no pregnancy, no conception. Though they bring up their children, yet I will bereave them to the last man. Which sounds like a military aspect here. Like, you know, this is what's going to happen militarily. In fact, this is what is happening. In England, it's happening here as well. That, you know, the military is being severely tested by, you know, the conflicts that are going on. And we're just not going to have the people soon to be able to fight the wars. And verse 14, give them, O Lord, what will you give? Give them a miscarrying womb and dry breasts. You know, this would be the end result of turning away from God. I mean, just consider for a moment thinking about this passage, that since Roe v. Wade in 1973, so 34 years ago, 50 million babies have been aborted in the United States, of whom approximately half would have been male. And all of those would either be of military age or coming up to military age in the next 10 or 15 years. Just, you know, staggering when you think about it, what we've done, and you know, the consequences of this. Now you compare that to the Islamic nations. The Financial Times had an article on Israel and the Palestinians. It said this: the United Nations, the Palestinians have 8-point-something kids per couple, and again, the Jews have 1.5 or something. So the number of Jews is going down, the number of Palestinians increasing dramatically. The United Nations treats every resident of Gaza as a refugee. It provides housing, schooling, and medication for every newborn, whether a first child or a tenth sibling. As a result, a Jewish majority in Israel and the territories has been turned into a minority. In the over 60s age bracket, Jews enjoy a 3-to-1 lead in population. But they lose ground in the younger generations that will wage the wars of the coming decades. In 2005, there were 640,000 Jewish boys under 15 against 1.1 million in the Arab sector. So you see, the Jews can't exist for much longer as a nation. Many young Jews are their family's only sons who concentrate on future vocations. In fact, Daniel Pipes highlighted yesterday that 1 in 4 young guys in Israel will not do military service. They claim an exemption on some grounds because they are their parents' only child. Most people don't have more than one son. However, more than 2/3 of the Arab boys are second, third, and even fourth brothers. And you know, the parents are proud of their son if he blows himself up and takes 5 Jews with him. You know, it's something that they are proud of. Neither their fathers nor the UN will leave them any property or prepare them for a decent place in life, which means more and more of them will become suicide bombers, is the point that's being made by this article. So when you look at demographic trends, it's not too difficult to see how our nations will fall. Every abortion, every vasectomy even, is another nail in the coffin of our children's future. Look at Mark chapter 10. Mark chapter 10. Now, we're not the first generation to find children rather bothersome. Obviously, the disciples had a problem, as we saw earlier in the sermonette. And you'll see here as well, in verse 13 of chapter 10, "Then they brought little children to him, that he might touch them. But the disciples rebuked those who brought them. But when Jesus saw it, he was greatly displeased and said to them," by the way, I should mention here, to be fair, to be honest, I mentioned how people in Ghana love to have lots of children, but the men don't particularly want to have anything to do with the children. And so, you know, if children do come up, the men can react just the same as what it says here. The disciples rebuked those who brought them. They'll push the children away. And, you know, I try to always put that right by trying to include the children. And so there's a difference there in culture. So, you know, they're not perfect in the way that they look at children either. But I was thinking of that when I was reading this particular passage. Anyway, the disciples rebuked those who brought them. But when Jesus saw it, he was greatly displeased, and he said to them, "Let the little children come to me, and do not forbid them, for of such is the kingdom of God. Assuredly, I say to you, whoever does not receive the kingdom of God as a little child will by no means enter it." And he took them up in his arms, laid his hands on them, and blessed them. And this is something that we do, of course, today, and we literally today, and we feel that we are following in Christ's example there of blessing the children and asking God to bless the children shortly after they are born. Look at Hebrews chapter 2. You know, it really is so nice to come back from a long trip and to see the grandchildren. I mean, we got back Monday night, And with the time difference and everything, we were really tired. In fact, we still haven't fully recovered. But on Tuesday, as soon as I could, I was over at Kurt's house, just wanted to see the grandchildren. And, you know, you just want to pick them up and play with them. And, you know, even after just 2 weeks, I mean, you miss them so much. And we were touched during the feast because Kurt sent us a text message while we were in the boondocks in Ghana. And the text message said that Paris, Kurt's eldest daughter, had asked if she could come over to Grandma and Granddad's to play. So, you know, it would have been a bit difficult to put her on a plane to Sanyani. But, you know, it was very touching. So, you know, as soon as we could, we got back together with them. And next weekend, it'll be nice to see Alex's too. We haven't seen them for 7 weeks, but we'll be there next weekend when Elena is going to be blessed at services in Lafayette. Hebrews chapter 2 and verse 10 reminds us of the potential of our children. We are made in the image of God. And our children are made in the image of God. And every single one of our children has the potential to be in God's family. And of course, I think most of them will be, because, you know, when people do understand the plan of God, whether it be in this life or whether it be after the second resurrection, I would like to think that most people will submit themselves to God and decide to follow Him and to keep His laws and His commandments. So it says in verse 10, it was fitting for Him, for whom are all things and by whom are all things, in bringing many sons to glory, to make the captain of their salvation perfect through suffering. So, you know, Jesus Christ was made perfect through the sufferings that He went through. But of course, what He went through was necessary for God's plan to be completed. And His plan is to bring many sons to glory. You know, every single person who's ever lived has the potential to be in the kingdom of God, to be in God's divine family, to be a spirit being for eternity. That is the potential that each of our children have. And the more children we have, you know, of course, the more children there's going to be, the more people there's going to be in the family of God. And, you know, so again, you know, we need to change our thinking a bit, because I think in our society we can be rather negative about children. And, you know, I can understand that, because it's not easy bringing up children today. And it certainly is easier in a place like Ghana. My son was having a difficult time Wednesday evening. They came over for dinner, and, you know, he just found the kids overwhelming. He'd been with them all day. And, you know, he said, "How on earth did you do it?" He said, "You had three." And I looked at him and I quipped, "We had servants." You know, we were in Ghana at the time when they were that age. We had servants. And in particular, we had a nanny called Naomi. And even now, whenever we go back, you know, Diane will spend time with Naomi and bring out pictures of the children. Naomi, as it happens, has only had three children. So it's a small family by Ghanaian standards. But maybe after looking after our three, she decided that was enough and stopped. And she's just got the three children. But, you know, it was easier because of that. In some respects, it wasn't easier in every respect, because in Ghana you had all the diseases and things to contend with. And then, of course, we were in England for a while too, and we had to look after them. We didn't have a nanny in England or servants, so we had to take care of them ourselves. But, you know, I think sometimes we can be rather negative, because children get in the way. They stop us from being able to enjoy everything we want to enjoy. And we have to change our thinking in that, and realize that our children are the most important thing of all. I mean, our marriages, our children, family, basically. You know, our relationship with God, our relationship with our family, those two things are the most important things in life. And, you know, that's what I try to get across to my children in talking about this, that you have to look upon the children as your priority. And then you will start and enjoy them. You'll start and enjoy them if you want to spend the time with them, and you really devote yourself to them. And you can see that in people who have made their families the priority in their lives. So I'd encourage you all to do that. It's been a real thrill for us to welcome our four grandchildren into the world and to realize that each one of them can be in God's kingdom. At the same time, it's rather sad to think of the years that lie ahead between now and the kingdom. The threats to the peoples of the United States and other Western nations are growing daily, and a major contributory factor truly has been our low birth rate. We just do not have the people needed to protect us, both at home and overseas. It's all prophesied, but we, in ignorance, have helped bring about the fulfillment of the prophecies by being the first generation in history to strictly limit the size of our families. So let's remember what a great blessing children are. And you know, if you're young enough and able, have as many as you can possibly have. Anyway, you know, even here, the blessing of the children is different, because if I was in Ghana for the blessing of the children, there'd be at least 30 people lined up down here. We've got, what, two? Well done. Okay, David and Colleen have Carson, and the Thomases have brought their grandson, and he's here, one of Abe's boys. So we'll have both of those, and I'll ask Mike Joseph if he can come up as well, and then I'll pray over one, and he can pray over the other.